You will get Bible scholars arguing from sunup to sundown about who the author of Ecclesiastes is. The reasons are many and complicated, but it boils down to basically two choices. It was Solomon, David's son, or it was someone else. If it was someone else, it was a person who was not being dishonest by writing so that we would think it was David's son. He was using a common literary technique, if it was someone else. He was using a common literary technique of that day. If you studied under a great teacher and you wanted to honor that teacher, it was very common for you as a student to write a book and give the author as your teacher. Not you, but your teacher. Now, you young men graduating from high school looking ahead to college, don't try that. They'll call it plagiarism, and you'll be in a lot of trouble. But it was a way in that day to honor your teacher. There was nothing dishonest about it, nothing deceitful about it. Simply a way to honor. So it was either Solomon who wrote Ecclesiastes, or it was someone else who wanted to do him honor and wrote this book. I'll make it simple for us. In my opinion, and if you reach a different opinion in your scholarship, you're in good company. But in my opinion, Solomon, David's son, wrote Ecclesiastes. Follow along, please, as I read from one of the most unexpected texts in the Bible. Ecclesiastes chapter 1, beginning at verse 18. Excuse me, chapter 1, beginning at verse 1, continuing through verse 18. Now, depending on the version that you read, this first verse will sound different. It will either say the words of Solomon, or the words of the preacher, or the words of the searcher, or the words of the teacher, or more and more today people are simply saying the words of Qohelet. Who? That's the Hebrew word for the writer of the book. And it means preacher, searcher, teacher, all of those. We'll read it, the words of Solomon, the son of David, king in Jerusalem. Vanity of vanities, says Solomon, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. What advantage does man have in all his work which he does under the sun? A generation goes and a generation comes, but the earth remains forever. Also the sun rises and the sun sets and hastens to its place. It rises there again. Blowing toward the south, then turning toward the north, the wind continues swirling along, and on its circular course the wind returns. All the rivers flow into the sea, yet the sea is not full. To the place where the rivers flow, there they flow again. All things are wearisome. Man is not able to tell it. The eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor is the ear filled with hearing. That which has been is that which will be. That which has been done is that which will be done. So there's nothing new under the sun. Is there anything of which one might say, see, this is new? Already it has existed for ages which were before us. There's no remembrance of earlier things, and also the latter things which will occur, there will be for them no remembrance among those who come later still. I, Solomon, have been king over Israel in Jerusalem, and I set my mind to seek and explore by wisdom concerning all that has been done under heaven. It's a grievous task which God has given to the sons of men to be afflicted with. I've seen all the works which have been done under the sun, and behold, all is vanity and striving after the wind. What is crooked cannot be straightened. What is lacking cannot be counted. I said to myself, behold, I magnified and increased wisdom more than all who were over Jerusalem before me, and my mind has observed the wealth of wisdom and knowledge. And I set my mind to know wisdom and to know madness and folly. I realized that this also is striving after the wind. Because in much wisdom there is much grief, and increasing knowledge results in increasing pain. And you say, wow, what a downer. Solomon was a loud voice. He said, I magnified and increased wisdom more than all who were in Jerusalem before me. We're surrounded by loud voices. Popular voices who declare that they know it all. Case in point, there was another doctor arrested this week and charged with gruesome abortion murders. And a supporter of his said, this kind of thing is what will happen if safe abortion is driven underground. Pontificating. Safe abortion. For who? Certainly not the baby. And safe abortion is the law of the United States, not soon to be reversed or driven underground. And these heinous acts continue regardless. Safe abortion has made no one safe, but these loud voices declare all knowledge. Now there is a second voice. A voice that rejects popular false claims. It's a voice that leads not to despair as Solomon's does, but to hope. It's the voice of Jesus. And we begin to hear it in Matthew chapter 5 in that passage that's called the Sermon on the Mount. And for the next 7 weeks, I want us to compare the words of Solomon with the words of Jesus. As these two who call for honesty in a world captivated by falsehood have very different outlooks. And Solomon, thinking out loud about his life, says, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. Solomon is not saying that life is absolutely meaningless. It depends on, again, the translation you're reading. Some of them will say, life is meaningless. Some of them will say, life is pointless. Some will say, as the version I read this morning, life is vanity. And let me give you a little Hebrew lesson here. Hang on to this one. The Hebrew word is Hebel. In English, it's spelled H-E-B-E-L. And this is what it means. A puff of wind. A breath. Nothing else. Solomon is saying life is a puff of wind. That's all life amounts to. And you might imagine atheists and critics love this book. They say there is such cynicism and lack of purpose in Ecclesiastes. And unless you read it all, you might agree with them. Because they read the first few chapters and they quit. And they never get to the end. Where Solomon sets it up for 11 chapters, life is a puff of wind. And at the end he says, fear God and keep His commandments. For God will bring every act to judgment and everything which is hidden, whether good or evil. For 11 chapters, he's talking about things that are under the sun. That's a key phrase in this book. under the sun, a closed system, a world that leaves God out, a world very much like the one in which we live today. And if you leave God out of your life and out of the world, it's just a breath of wind. Vanity, foolishness, meaningless, nothingness. But Solomon gets to the end of his writing, and he'll talk about all the things he has done and all the things he's explored and all the things he's tried. And he gets to the end, and he says, "But God." There is a word from God. And he's asking, what is life in a world where God exists but doesn't speak? And the heartbreaking conclusion, if you leave off chapter 12, is nothing has meaning. And he gives three patterns which emerge that lead to this conclusion. The first one is, nothing human lasts. We read those words. Generations come and generations go. There were countless unremembered generations before we got here. There'll be countless generations after we're gone. And it's only the rocks and the hills and those types of things which endure. Human beings don't count. You historians of American history know that on July 1st, 1863, General Robert E. Lee led his second incursion into the North. What was called the high water mark of the Confederacy. And there he attacked Union forces in a little town in Pennsylvania called Gettysburg. And they deployed across the hillside, and there was one spot called Devil's Den, which is a lot of rocks that were just piled up by God over the centuries, over the millennia. And rebel forces took that spot as a place from which to be safe and attack the Yankees. And it worked real well until the Yankees took a little hill next door called Little Round Top and began to lob cannon shell down to Devil's Den. I was there 100 years later. 1963. And there is a plaque and there is an engraving of a photograph taken after the battle of a Confederate soldier who's laying there by Devil's Den behind the rocks. And Solomon is saying life is like that. Neither that soldier, nor me, nor you, amount to anything. We'll pass and the world will little note nor long remember. And somehow that doesn't seem right. And the second pattern that bothers Solomon is nothing changes. The cycles go on. There's no direction, no meaning, no purpose. The winds blow. Blow from the south to the north. They're going to come around the circle and they're going to blow again. The earth spins and night follows day continually. Tanya mentioned drought conditions of recent day. But there's been rain. And the drought will come back another day. And there'll be more rain. And the rain becomes a stream, and the streams flow into the river, and the river flows into the ocean, and the ocean never gets full. Everything is meaningless. And if that doesn't work for you, try this. You washed the dishes last night. Your dishes again today. You changed the oil in your car 3 months ago. You've got to change it again. All is vanity, a puff of wind. This shirt was clean this morning. It goes in the laundry tomorrow. And so it goes. Thirdly, Solomon says there's nothing I can do about it. Nothing lasts, nothing changes, nothing I can do. I've seen all things that are done under the sun, all of them are meaningless, a chasing after the wind, what's twisted cannot be straightened, what's lacking cannot be counted. And man's just passing through. Ecclesiastes under the sun is absent divine revelation, but we know better. From the beginning, God has spoken to us. He's spoken through creation. He's spoken through angels and prophets and poets, inaudible words and on stone tablets, promises made, whispers of the Spirit. And the writer of Hebrews said, in these last days, He has spoken to us through His Son, the Word made flesh. He is something new under the sun. Solomon's poor in spirit and therefore despairs. Jesus says those same circumstances are the doorway to blessing. I mentioned the rocks at Devil's Den. The day will come when this world will be renewed and those rocks will no longer exist. Solomon's wrong. It's not the inanimate objects that remain. It's the children of God. Jesus said, the meek will inherit the earth. Solomon tried to figure things out and said, it's no use. Jesus declares that those who make peace, those who pursue purity, those who are willing to suffer for righteousness are making an eternal contribution. And God sees and remembers and will honor the faith of His children. I found this song Wednesday afternoon. Wendy, if I'd have found it sooner, I'd have tried to found a soundtrack for the choir to sing. Probably most of you know this song, 1970. Kris Kristofferson wrote, Help Me Make It Through the Night. It's been sung by Elvis and Joan Baez and Jerry Lee Lewis and Gladys Knight and the Pips. Sammy Smith recorded the quintessential version of it. Look it up on YouTube if you want to hear it. But here's what the song says. I don't care what is right or wrong. I won't try to understand. Let the devil take tomorrow. Lord, tonight I need a friend. Yesterday is dead and gone and tomorrow's out of sight. And it's sad to be alone. Help me make it through the night. If that song were a prayer, God would answer it. There are times when our despair is so deep we can't see beyond the night. God hears the cry, meets us in the dark, and leads us into the night. But Solomon and Kristofferson don't have the last word. There can be joy in suffering if we know that we are being changed for the better. That God is bringing a greater good. If human existence has no meaning, then it really is a puff of wind. If God has spoken and we are loved, then we enter into hardship and chaotic circumstances with hope. We don't need to understand it all if we're following the Lord. And we'll conclude this morning by singing a better song. Solomon wrote of a world in which the speech of God is absent, the natural world just goes on and on in meaningless cycles. But for those who have ears to hear, the natural world declares the glory of God. This is my Father's world, and to my listening ears, all nature sings, and round me rings the music of the spheres. This is my Father's world. I rest me in the thought of rocks and trees, of skies and seas. His hand the wonders wrought. This is my Father's world. Oh, let me ne'er forget that though the wrong seems off so strong, God is the ruler yet. This is my Father's world. Why should my heart be sad? The Lord is King. Let heaven ring. God reigns. Let earth be glad. Vanity of vanities. Vanity of vanities. All is vanity. Solomon is thinking out loud, but he concludes it's all hopeless, and that's true outside of God. Solomon asks, what does humanity gain from their labor that they toil at under the sun? Jesus asks, what good will it be for a man to gain the whole world and forfeit his soul? The promises of the world are empty, they are hopeless. If you think beyond the surface level, they are meaningless. But Jesus provides us with an alternative worldview. Carolyn, come back. Wendy, get ready to lead us in number 144. First two verses and then pause and sing the third. As you listen to the words of Jesus, you've heard the words of Solomon with despair. Hear the words of Jesus with hope. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. Blessed are the merciful, for they will be shown mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called the sons of God. Blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when people insult you, persecute you, and falsely say all kind of evil against you because of me. Rejoice and be glad, because great is your reward in heaven.